Hello? Hello? Are you there? Is this working? Dan? Vince? I can see you're online. Can you hear me? Is it my headphones? Hello? Is this working? Hello? Hello? Hello?
Oh, thank God, I think he's gone down.
Oh, great, great. Now we can get on with the show.
Yeah, right, let's do it. And welcome to episode 25 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm your host, Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Miles and Stalkerville. And joining me for this week's sleigh ride into this week's festive abyss that is small press are writer, artist, part-time masked vigilante known as Skull Mask, and creator of the superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
Now, normally I've got some sort of creative quip to introduce Tony, but he couldn't be with us this week, I'm afraid.
Nope, sadly not.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that are just switching off now, aren't there?
Yeah, half the audience.
What, so how many is it now? Two?
Yeah.
Yeah,
probably. Cut down to the one or two.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, Tony.
Well, and then being Tony.
Yeah, Tony and Tony's mum. Yeah, he couldn't be with us this week, I'm afraid. Now, work at this time of year can be really busy for him, what with making sure the elves have finished the gifts. He's got to deliver on the 24th. Plus, he's got to go through his list, check it twice, you know, all that jazz. There's a lot of responsibility involved, you know, doing a lot of cardio, practicing his chimney dives. Although, with Tony, knowing Tony, I'm not entirely sure that a chimney dive is what it sounds like. We miss you, Tony.
Yeah.
He's a very sensitive soul, and I know he wanted to be here, but he couldn't, you know. Yep. But, you know, you'll get gifts under the tree on December the 25th.
Yeah. And give a little salute to Tony. So thanks, Tony.
Oh.
You sacrificed.
Sacrificed indeed. We don't want anyone to sacrifice anything for this show.
No.
We're not a cult.
Yeah.
I had to make sure I said that right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Sunday night after all. It's been a long week. Anyway, this show's going to be a little bit different. We had a whole sort of idea planned out of what we're going to do, which we're going to talk about next week as well. Some of the stuff that made us comic book fans and things like that, you know, the stuff that we liked. So we did a lot of research. And then, of course, one of the three amigos couldn't be here. So... You know.
I think next week's show should be excellent in the fact that we're going to kind of be looking
don't
back.
Don't promise anything like that.
Set myself up for a fall. We'll be looking back at the year in kind of small press highlights, looking forward, and then kind of we'll be listening to kind of listeners' opinions and requests and what they got planned for 2016. How are you going to make your small press year 2016?
Yeah, because I don't know about you, but like at the end of the year, I set myself big plans for the next year. Like this, yeah, it never happens. But you know, I always think I'm going to do this, this, and this.
Well, I've been kind of stepping back a little the past week or so because I put Vanguard on hiatus to kind of like look at my art game and the things.
So you're only doing what 50 comics a week now? Is that what you're doing?
Well, yeah, kind of. I'm only doing the odd like 3 or 4 pages a week.
Yeah. Bastard.
I don't know, sometimes you kind of like you look at what you're doing and you think I've gone down somewhere which I'm using too much stuff as a crutch and I want to get back to kind of solidifying the basics.
Yeah,
so that's what I've spent my time doing the past couple of days.
I mean, do you draw like literally every day? Do you make sure you draw something every day?
I usually draw about half an hour a day minimum, probably some like an hour and a half. Not all the time.
Yeah,
I think the thing is that you're on with my stuff, once the kind of you've drawn it and inked it and it's scanned, you're on the computer. I spend more time working on the machine than I do drawing. I don't know about this. Is that the same with you?
Yeah, well, yeah, because like, once you've drawn it and you think it's great, you then got to scan it in and then clean it, haven't you?
Yeah. It's just cleaning it up.
And if you see my artwork, it needs a bloody lot of cleaning. No, but you've got to make sure it's high res and...
Yeah.
You know.
One of the things I'm guilty of is just like, fix it in Photoshop. Fix it in Photoshop. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? All the time. I presume that's just the way... does everyone do that? I don't know.
I think, well, in this day and age, it's an easy go-to, isn't it? Is that one of the crutches you were talking about?
Sometimes, yeah. I think, like, yeah, I'll just go in and swap that out. And, rather kind of... I can quickly do something and then say, right, I can polish it up in Photoshop, but really I want that.
Yeah.
Good. You stand on its own.
Yeah. I mean, we live in an age where Photoshop can fix those mistakes, or like you can just completely change your panel, can't you? Change your face or, you know, and this isn't even like working digitally.
No.
I mean, because we don't, do we? You're like physical paper, pen and paper, and so am I. So, you know, it's even easier with digital, I guess, you know.
Yeah. It does concern me. Like a lot of people think with the Photoshop, it's just press a button, away it goes, it's great. And it's like, it's definitely not. I mean, people at work, I've restrained myself from using another word there. But, just run it through a filter. And it's like, no. If you run it through a filter, everyone that knows anything about Photoshop will know you've just pressed bevel or emboss or something stupid.
Oh, bevel and emboss. there's an 80s detective show. No, really? No, but everyone, I mean, when you first learn Photoshop, we're already talking about making comics, we haven't even got into the questions yet. When you first learn Photoshop, you have the honeymoon period, don't you, where you look at the filters and you're like, oh, and you try and you think that the filters are the best thing in the world. And when you know how to use Photoshop, you don't use the filters whatsoever.
Yeah. It's the one thing is lens flare. That everyone fucking uses lens flare. I say everyone, like when you see a beginner, I'm not going to knock it. If you want to use lens flare, you use the lens flare. But a lot of them just kind of generic stick a lens flare on, to make it look cool. And it's just so obvious that's what it is.
Yeah, everything's got a place, but sometimes it's quite obvious to hide inadequacies in other areas.
Yeah,
and trust me, I've got a lot of inadequacies to go.
It's kind of like you're using kind of like a special moment or a shout or something. And if your work's shouting all the time and there's no kind of quiet moments, it's kind of people just tune out. It's not. You can't kind of like keep just doing a George Lucas and throwing everything at the screen. And
oh, topical. Topical. Oh, we'll get onto that in a bit. Oh, although we want to say straight from the bat, people, that we're not a film show, but today both Dana and myself saw the new Star Wars movie. I posted on Twitter and said I love Captain Kirk in it. I thought he was brilliant. And the trek to Mordor was epic. So, fantastic stuff.
Yeah, there'll be no spoilers on the show.
Yeah, everyone's a ghost. Oh, yeah. Shit.
One thing I found interesting, there was like kids in there that were like 5 and under easily. And it's like, that's a 2 hours, 20 minutes film. And there's like a lot of violence and killing and stuff.
The thing is, it's a 12A, isn't it?
Yeah, 12A. So it's not kind of...
Someone did ask me, like, I saw someone afterwards and say, can I take like my 8-year-old to it? My first thing was, it's a 12 certificate. And they were like, it's 12A. And I thought, could they? I mean, it's Star Wars, so I think they should be able to, because it's supposed to be a rollicking adventure.
Which is... A parent, I'd make a judgment on your child, and you know how...
I judge children everywhere. Yeah.
Like, for instance, today, me and my son were watching some of the bits from Jason and the Argonauts, and he didn't like a bit where a man got killed by a skeleton. It's like, well,
So did you put him on the naughty step? Because anyone who doesn't like anything from Jason and the Argonauts... I'm sorry, Dan, I've judged your son.
So obviously the belt came off in one flick. One easy motion, as it always does.
No. Oh, dear.
It's, like, you kind of feel, it's weird. When you kind of have kids, you kind of think, they'll be fine with that. And then they're not. And then other things, you think, oh, better be careful with this. And then they've got no problem with it whatsoever. It can be really hard to judge.
He's just like, what's the matter with you? I was watching Arnold Schwarzenegger's Commando when I was 6. Yeah.
Not too far from the truth.
The problem I had with Star Wars is they had a bit beforehand. They had, you know, when they say these trailers are, you know, that they're suitable for this presentation. Mm. And the first trailer was that one for the new Leonardo DiCaprio film, The Revenant.
Oh, okay.
That's not... I didn't think that was appropriate.
Yeah, they just had to go hand in hand, didn't
they? No, plus it looked grim and boring. Yeah. And boring. But that's another... Yeah. Right, it's become the awesome movie,
one
movie
last
podcast.
Thing, I think next time when the next one comes out, whenever, is it 2017? I'm going to stay away from all the trailers, all the clips, everything, because I can put so much of the film together by seeing a trailer or two. And like, use a lot of the iconic shots of the film in the trailer, and you think, oh, right, this is this bit, and that's that bit. And
I do that with all the Marvel films as well. I'll probably watch the first trailer, and then there's just nothing but, like, here's 30 seconds. Here's the first 6 minutes of the film. I'm like, I don't want, you know, I'm going to see it at the cinema. I don't want this. But that's because I'm a crotchety old man.
Because they had the trailer for that new Star Trek film, and that looked awful, that trailer.
Yeah, it hasn't gone down too well.
No, yeah, it's just that kind of lot of... What was the song they were using? It was really...
Sabotage by Beastie Boys. Yeah.
Not got a problem with the song at all. Quite like that song, but it just didn't really seem appropriate. But anyway.
Oh, dear. Yes, so we both liked it, and is that all we're going to say about it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, go see it.
Yeah. Even if you are like 8 years old. Or
Sneak into the cinema and see it.
Is that what you used to do?
No, I very much vividly remember my dad watching Rambo First Blood Part 2 in the front room, and he told us, like, right, you can't come in. And I snuck in and then saw a bit where Rambo shoots someone through the head with a bow.
I tell you what, there's if there's ever a moment that makes so much sense for you being the person you are, it'll make sense now. It all makes sense.
And I remember one of my friends lent me a really grainy copy of RoboCop. The sequence where, like, Alex Murphy's killed. Seeing that on, like, a grainy video kind of made it even more kind of like a snuff film or something. It was horrific. Even to this day, I have trouble watching that sequence.
The thing is, when I was younger, I didn't think so much about it. When I watched that, it just went part and parcel with the whole sort of uber violence of that film. Mm. And then I didn't watch it for like 10 years, and it's on Netflix or whatever, and I immediately thought, right, I'm watching RoboCop. And it seemed to go on forever.
Yeah. I tell you what, there's an extended, like, a director's cut, and it's worse. It's like he gets his arm blown off. It's just a lot more prolonged.
Is it your favourite film?
RoboCop is my favourite film.
Is it really?
Yeah, favourite film.
Yeah, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. RoboCop's amazing.
I'd like it 10 out of 10. There's nothing in that film I would say this needs improving. I think it's just one of those spot-on films.
And it's also, in terms of design, I think it's one of my top 5 movie posters of all time.
Yeah, I just don't think kind of one of those things they should have tried to remake.
No.
There's a line in the sand for me at Taxi Driver, so don't fucking make, don't remake Taxi Driver.
Oh, right, I thought you were just going to go that way. it would all make sense.
Yeah.
Yes, so...
Anyway.
So that's, we could talk about this all night.
Yeah.
But we're not going to, because that's not why people have listened. Well, they might have. Who cares? we're just appreciative of both Tony and his mum for listening to this. Yeah.
Well, that's where we started. Yeah. Massive tangent.
When we put together this show, obviously we were going to do like the regular books and etc, and we had a big topic, but as three of us couldn't do it, we're saving that for next week, like we said, and so we put out a shout out to some of the listeners, because it was just going to be me and Dan dancing cheek to cheek.
Yeah. Uncomfortable silence.
There's never an uncomfortable silence with you, Dan.
Yeah, just a silence.
I'm saying nothing. Anyway, so thank you to all the people who got in touch on the Twitter or the Facebook with a few questions. Because obviously everyone's busy this week. Everyone has been, you know, we're in the run-up to Christmas. Dan, Tony and myself, you know, we've all been super busy because the last week of work before Christmas... can be a bit hectic.
Indeed.
Was yours, Dan?
Very.
Yeah. And what about the vigilantism? Was that right? Is it better at Christmas, or is it worse?
Saw some action on Black Eye Friday, as they call it.
What's that?
That's the nickname for the last Friday of the year when everyone goes out on a bender for Christmas.
Oh, right.
So, yeah.
Is that seriously a thing?
Yeah.
Or is that just your thing? Is that what you've called it?
No, I'm pretty sure that's what they call it.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, to don the mask a few times. Yeah.
Oh, next year we have to get some fan art of skull masks, don't we? Oh dear. Yeah, so thanks for getting in touch with your questions. And what we're gonna do, we haven't had such a chance to read small press and things like that this week. I'm gonna be honest, I haven't had a chance to read anything this week. So we're just gonna talk about comics and comic making goodness, and hopefully you might be able to get some tips out of us. I mean, Tony's not here to put us off or to be mean to us. So then we might actually be able to help people. No, we won't. No. The little Tony voice in my head's going, no, you won't. You won't be able to help anyone.
No.
So
yeah, I'm pretty sure he would say that.
Yeah. Yeah. He'll talk over everything I say. Yeah. As you loyal listeners will know. So shall we start and see where this, because this is unscripted, people. This is like Whose Line Is It Anyway? Yeah. You know, when it was good, like years and years and years and years and
years ago. Years ago. If you're under the age of 35, you probably won't remember that.
Ah, oh, so true. So, shall we start? Right. James Gibbs got in touch.
Yep.
It's quite a specific one, this first one I've got on my list, on the crazy scroll that is my notebook. it's red pen and something else that I can't quite make out. And it's going to be quite good for you, Dan, because it's something you're looking at the moment. He asked about the basic cost of getting a comic printed. For example, 100 issues. I mean, obviously, I don't think there's going to be a long-winded answer to this one.
No.
It all depends on what you want to get out of it. You know, and whether you're a black and white comic or whether you're a full-colour comic or... Do you have any knowledge of paper stock? I mean, Dan, you work in the sort of creative industry and stuff.
Yeah.
So you've got more of an idea of what you're looking for.
Indeed, yeah. I mean, I think before you kind of start off, even begin looking around, just do some basic research online, kind of reading into some of the terms, and then just get in contact with the printers themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a couple on Twitter who specifically do comic book publishing.
Yeah.
And just ask them for... A lot of the time they have a specs pack that they'll send out to you, and they'll quite happily talk through options of what you want to do and what you'd like out of the product.
Yeah. I mean, look at what you like when you pick books up. You know, you've obviously picked up small press books, I'm guessing. So if you like the look of a certain book, see who printed it, ask them, you know, because it was very much when I printed the Red Mask at first, there was a type of comic that I liked the look of. Like, it had a sort of a thicker card stock cover with a heavier paper inside, so I naturally sort of said, you printed this one, I want it like this, please, you know. And they'll of course send you out proofs, and you know, you'll go through that whole business. Now there's three off the top of my head. We don't play favorites here, so we're not sponsored by any comics printers, so
nope.
Yeah. There's UK Comics, which is ukcomicscreative.co.uk.
yep.
There's comicprintinguk.com. Yep. And there's the smaller scale that I know the Maddiest guys use of calf printing. Now, calf printing you can find on Facebook. I haven't used him yet. It's something I'm going to definitely, because he's a shorter run sort of printer, I believe. Yes, there's Stu at UK Comics Creative. You know, he'll answer all your questions, and like if you want a quote, email him. And Rich at Comic Printing UK will do exactly the same. You know, so get in touch with them. Get a rough quote, because obviously the thickness of a paper, I mean, how much of a difference does it make, Dan? Does it make a massive difference?
Well, we usually only kind of factor in the paper size because of when you're posting stuff. I mean, if you're sending out a great big chunky book, and obviously the postage is going to go up over using a kind of lower GSM, it's kind of, you get something, there's positive and negatives for kind of going up in weight and down. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And also, that's another side note, bear in mind the postage, because you'll have the quote for the... And they'll probably put it quite clear on the quote anyway. But you'll have the price, but bear in mind that they've got to deliver it as well. And if you're getting 100 issues of a comic printed, that's two boxes
Yeah.
And if you've posted anything in the UK, that's not cheap these days.
So. No. Well, I got a quote off a couple of printers recently, and because it's quite a lot, they both said in it, this will include delivery to one UK mainland address.
Mm. Yeah.
So it depends, because they may have like a kind of a price threshold that when they go over that,
yeah,
they'll offer free postage. I don't know. You'd have to get in touch.
You're looking at how many numbers? What's the quantity you're looking for? I mean, there are some guys out there like Mike Garley or Tom Ward or someone like that. I know that they've gotten bigger runs of their contracts, yeah, which works out cheaper in the long run. You have to bear that in mind. The smaller runs will be a lot more expensive.
Yeah.
So the more you order, the cheaper it'll get, and therefore the more you'll make at your table, etc.
Potentially.
But, yeah, potentially, if anyone likes what you do. Yeah. But we don't always have the money to get the larger print runs.
No.
And in this business, I don't think you should look to make that much of a profit. I never have. You know, whatever.
Since you look to cover my overheads.
Exactly. You
cover what I'm doing, I'm cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, to answer the original question, the basic cost of getting comics printed, for 100 issues, and this is going to be a ballpark, I'm not, you know, this is based on my experience and stuff. Mm. For 100 issues, if it's, I don't know, 24 pages, full colour inside and outside, because that makes a big difference. If you've got a full colour comic, that will make a huge amount of difference to the printing. You're probably looking at about between $310, $350.
Okay.
I would factor in. Yeah. I think that, you know, I'm not gonna be too specific about certain things, but
no,
you know, you gotta think in those numbers, £310 to £350 around then. I mean, it could go up depending, you know. I mean, if someone listens to this in 5 years' time, don't pay attention to anything I'm saying, because money is irrelevant. Yeah, money is absolutely irrelevant, and we're all eating each other for food.
Yeah, we're so, in a wasteland.
Yeah, which Dan rules with an iron fist. Literally an iron fist.
Yeah.
but that's for full colour. And I would say if it was black and white interior, how much of a difference would that make? You're probably looking at what? I don't know, $250?
Yeah, it's a fair old whack down.
Yeah, it's a fair old whack down. I mean, that's why the majority of comics you'll see out there are black and white.
Yeah. I mentioned also on the, was it last week or the week before, when we was talking to Tally Bertram about the zombie comic. Oh, God, Undead.
Oh, yeah, Undead Outlaw. Zombie Outlaw.
Zombie Outlaw. Mm. And they had the glow-in-the-dark ink on the cover, which is just a massive cost. I mean, maybe like £50 to £100 on top of what you got for those issues. So when you factor in stuff like that, and for a gimmick cover, it's like, I think that's a real gamble.
I mean, like, we all remember the gimmick covers from the 90s, don't we, Dan?
Indeed. I've got most of them.
That hollow foil, the chrome. Yeah. Oh,
out covers.
Oh, God, yeah. But these were big printers who could get this thing done. Do you know what I mean? This isn't, you know. So when you see it on a small press table, it's amazing. And if that's what you want to do, you know, if you've got the cheddar to do it, then more power to you.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing I'd say is if you're gonna have a gimmick cover, make sure the inside of your book and the book itself is worth it.
Well, I guess also you're passing on that cost. If you pass on that cost to the reader, you may be pricing yourself £1 more per issue.
Yes.
And if someone's looking over your table and your comic's £5 and the chap on the next table is £1, £4, whatever.
Yeah. And some small press stuff can be quite expensive for what.
Yeah.
I mean, Tony's mentioned it before, like when he's been at small press events, like the price that they're asking for what you're getting doesn't always add up.
I mean, for someone blasting out like double-sided A4 out of a copy and then putting the staples in the middle, you're asking for £5. I think you're asking, for me personally, I wouldn't buy that, because then what might cost you, what, 50p to £1 to reproduce? I don't know. That's just
But you're also factoring, I mean, I guess people factor in their time that it's taken them to make it. You know, they're actually bespoke. Yeah. I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Yeah, if you're scaling it up with a colour version and someone's not charging similar, it's hard to sort of, do you know what I mean? If Joe Bloggs has got a colour one there, 30 pages for £5, and that one's a black and white stapled for £5, it's like they show by contrast.
Yeah. It also goes down to the quality of the work. If the comic's good enough, then it doesn't matter whether it's got if it's black and white or it's transparent yeah. or, you know.
Definitely.
Judge it. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Not on a cover. Never judge a book by its cover.
I had a chap recently in part of a couple of threads on groups on Facebook, and he ran a name of a webcomic past the group. So, would you read this webcomic? And it's like, well, I don't make a judgment on a name alone. Do you know what I mean? Would you read this comic based on a title? I don't know anything else about it.
That's really weird.
Yeah, I think a lot of those groups are filled with people who kind of are well-meaning amateurs and haven't really taken that first step beyond thinking, I want to make a comic. Mm. I'm not being down on those kind of...
No, because you can't doubt anyone's passion. No. You know, if they're going out and they're doing this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah.
Some of the questions are very odd. I wouldn't expect that one.
Yeah, I mean, because you could come up with anything, couldn't you? Cause yeah. What's in a title?
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't really give away... A good title is kind of essential, but it's not the only thing. It's kind of quite relative.
Yeah.
Yeah. Red Mask of Mars, Dynamite, does what it says on the tin.
Oh, thank you. That was one of those rare experiences of the title was there from the very beginning, which a lot of the ideas behind the comic were, you know, they just sort of... Essentially, people, what I'm telling you is I plan nothing. If it pops into my head, it's going on the page. No, it was the B-movie feel of the name and stuff, which I like. What about Vanguard? How did that name come about?
My idea from the beginning was to have this generic supergroup, and as the story progressed, they get more and more deeper and deeper into it, to the point where they can't come out of it, and that's kind of them done with. So I wanted kind of like a generic superhero group, you think like the Avengers or something. Yeah. So I think I just asked around and someone said, oh, Vanguard. I thought, oh, that sounds good. Let's go with that. It wasn't too much consideration, do you know what I mean?
So nonchalant.
Yeah, and I really wish I'd have gone and just done a bit more kind of research.
Is that because of the image, the Eric Larson character?
It's just so much. If you put in Vanguard and comic or Vanguard webcomic, there's a lot. Admittedly, my comic comes up first.
There's only one. That all of you people out there need to be reading. Eric Larson's. No, yeah, no.
There's a kind of product named Vanguard. So, kind of straight away, I've put myself up against it for no reason. I mean, it's not integral to the story that they're called that.
What sort of products are called Vanguard?
There's like a game called Card Fighter Vanguard. It's a big Japanese kind of Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh style game. That's out there. There's like a, I think there's an African news site called Vanguard, and there's this. Honestly, you type in Vanguard, and there's even on top webcomics, there's about four Vanguard. Well,
at least it's a name that isn't going to get you into any dodgy sort of Google searches, is it?
True. Yeah.
Not like Cat Slater's got a penis.
Yeah.
Like, Tony's classic strip.
Tony asked a question earlier this week. I don't know if he's asked to mention that, but I googled that on my phone and thought, great, now I've got that in my fucking. Oh, can we bring that up? I'd kind of searched it and I was like, oh, why did it look like that?
I dare not ask what the results were.
Oh, it was just the usual kind of badly drawn kind of fanfic porn of
just the usual. Hang on, how much of this are you checking out?
Well, no, just like the first page, you kind of get the links and then there's some images that, oh, here we go. But presumably, if you put in two comic characters and aren't they having sex, that you're going to get a plethora of answers.
Oh, God.
I think Tony messaged us and said that some of his work colleagues have winded him up saying that April O'Neil had sex with one of the turtles in the first TNT films.
Yes.
I've not seen the Michael Bay one. I don't know.
You lucky boy. Yeah, Tony actually, he knew he couldn't be here, so he asked the question, will Megan Fox ever have sex with a turtle in a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie?
I thought he said he had. They had.
I think his workmates were winding him up. But I think he knows now that she hasn't yet. I say yet because who knows what will happen in the sequel.
Yeah, God knows.
Well, they've got the
van. I was in the cinema when I first saw that trailer. I didn't even know that film was the sequel was coming along. Okay.
Yeah. The sequel trailer?
Yeah, TMN 2. Well, yeah, I didn't know that was even in production.
Oh, there you go. You can't stop this. You can't stop the Bay.
No.
Are you a Turtles fan, Dan?
Yeah, yeah and nay. I used to read Turtles before it kind of got a cartoon series.
Really? So, yeah. I was from the toys and cartoon generation.
I was in a comic shop in Croydon and then saw one of the issues and picked it up and thought, I picked it up on the title alone.
It was dark, it was violent. You know, it was everything a growing boy needed.
I actually, for my birthday, someone bought me the complete encyclopedia jobby of the Turtles, which is amazing. It's brilliant. Blimey. It's got like from day one, like when they first started their small press comics, all up to the shitty Michael Bay film, which I presume is shitty.
Have you seen the Netflix documentary? Well, it's not a Netflix documentary, but there's an actual documentary about the Turtles.
It's really good, actually.
Yeah, yeah. It tells a story from their creation up until, not the Michael Bay movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, just before it, I think.
It's got reproductions of, like, some of the first flyers they used to give out, and then they've got their numbers of how much they sold on the first issue and the second issue, and you see these big jumps in circulation. For two guys doing it, I kind of got to take my hat off.
I'd love to see you draw the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Challenge accepted.
Hey! Yeah. We should do something like that. We should just do the classics, you know, the ones we always used to... Nah, that's a lot of work. Yeah. Fuck it.
Actually, there's a lot of artists that kind of follow us. I'm sure like people would be up for a weekly sketch, this character kind of thing.
Maybe. So many ideas to add to the 2016 lot.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. Great, Dan. That's even more work for us. Cheers, man.
Pleasure.
Yeah, so anyway, I hope that we answered the comic printing question. All right. Lots of people you can check out. There'll be links in the show notes, of course, if you go to the awesomecomics.podbean.com, you know, all that jazz. On to the next one. Alan Henderson. He's asked, what defines a comic? This is quite a broad question, this. What defines a comic? Where are the lines between a newspaper strip, a zine, a comic, or an illustrated book? There's that silence.
I don't feel qualified to answer that. That's a very difficult one.
This is one of those ones that's like, right, Tony needs to be here for this.
Yeah.
Well, I think they're all valid. Me personally, I think it all depends on your views personally, doesn't it? For instance, a newspaper strip, I guess I've always considered them to be comics in my head. A zine, I'm going to confess, I haven't read many zines. There's lots of stuff out there, and I know there's lots of 2000 AD stuff. Do you read many zines or have read any zines?
More in the past, but I'm not sure if I would. I don't know. I've read zines with comics in them.
Yeah.
And they've also got big editorial pieces, but then so do some comics.
Yeah. So I guess you could say that the zines have comics within them, isn't it?
Yeah.
As the medium. An illustrated book, well, it all depends, doesn't it, really?
Well, okay. It wouldn't class a children's book where it's page illustration per page.
Yeah.
I wouldn't class that as a comic.
I mean, for me, if it's sequential, if there are panels, if there are speech bubbles, you know, people mix it up with their storytelling. But if the bones of a comic book are there, and it doesn't matter what shape, size, paper, whatever, I would consider that myself a comic.
I think it's very hard to make a definite kind of line to say this is that. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like when does a closed hand become a fist?
Because I think Alan does a lot of like strip stuff, doesn't he? I think he's done a lot of work like that.
Okay.
Which is great stuff. But
I would class that as a comic.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, easily. You know, as well as the Red Mask from Mars, obviously Stalkerville.
Yeah.
That was just a strip that I did like Monday to Friday, you know, when MySpace existed. Let's not go there. But I collected that into a book, and I still consider that to be me making comics.
Yeah. You know? My wife does a comic strip, OCD Girl, and she posts that like once every 2-3 weeks, and she's collected that in a book relatively recently. So
awesome. Where can you get that?
I'd have to stick that in the show notes because she's recently just moved it, but I think it's theBluntInstruments.net.
Yes, I've checked out a few of these, yeah.
OCD Girl.
Yeah, really good stuff.
Yeah, they're really kind of... Iron sharpens iron. My wife can be very sharp at times. So we'll stick the link up in the show notes. Yeah. Worth checking them out.
Yeah. So I think it all depends on your own definition of a comedy. Oh, that's a cop out, isn't it? In terms of answers, that's a proper cop out.
Yeah, it's kind of very difficult to answer, really. I don't know if you're seeking validation for your work, thinking, is this comics? I wouldn't spend too much time about that and just keep on creating.
Yeah, essentially, you just do the work and it will be what it will be.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? No, I'm not going to. I was going to take us down the road of like when it becomes more animated or motion comics. You know, when do you draw that line? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, interesting. I don't know.
I think there can be a difference between, Mark Waid with Thrill Bent Comics. It's panel by panel, and like sometimes like you move on to the next panel and a light will switch on and then off. You know, very simple. And Electro Comics have done a similar sort of thing, because they're exploring the medium. But it's still, for me, it's still a comic book. The DNA of it is a comic book.
Yeah.
Sometimes people they'll really push the boundaries of when they say motion comic. I don't read any motion comics. I mean, I know some people have some really strong views on them. I can't say anything either way, because I haven't seen a good one, but I haven't seen a bad one.
Yeah, I kind of, I've seen a lot of good ones, and I don't know. It's kind of like the in-between thing of having a comic and kind of a film, and there's a lot more kind of creativity or different kind of tools you can use to kind of illustrate your story. I saw one recently called Moth that used animated GIFs in pages, and like little elements would animate to kind of show like a character was going a bit crazy or not seeing things right, and that worked very well. And I think
Is that Moth, like MOTH?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
If you the one thing with motion comics is kind of the technology becomes a barrier from you kind of enjoying it, so you can't use it on this device, or you can only look it on X. That's when it's kind of like, I don't know,
it can be a hindrance.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, purely from a personal point of view, it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
I mean, just doing the comic book pages as it stands now, that's a lot of work. But I think if you're going to step into that realm, you need a team, you know.
Well, that Moth one is done by one person, so I was very surprised at how good the quality of it is. Excellent.
Oh.
So I could definitely put that in the show notes.
Oh, awesome.
We're talking about Electro Comics. I saw online that it's now available. The in-browser versions are now live.
Oh, amazing.
So look at Electro Comics. I don't know how you would do that. But they've announced that that's live and you can do so.
Oh, that's awesome. Because
you may have to download a plugin or something for your browser, whatever you use.
Because I know, like, all you guys out there with iPads and stuff, you've probably checked out, and I know Tony's a big fan of it on his iPad. But as I'm an Android user, no, I'm not actually an Android. I haven't had I haven't been able to delve into it. So I'm looking for, I know they're working on it on the different platforms, but these things take a lot of work, don't they?
So, definitely.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So I'll have to check that out then, see how that works. So there you go, there's another one. Alfie Gallagher, good old Alfie Gallagher.
Friend of the show,
and also had some pieces of work in an eBay auction where the proceeds went to Syria.
The one that Emily's running.
Yeah, Emily Owen, friend of the show. or Bully, if you're me, or Tony. Yeah, she set up an eBay auction, which I think it will be over at the moment, won't it? I think by the time this goes out,
unless she gets more artwork.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, she's non-stop working for charity and helping people and things like that. So, you know, she's actually a nice person, just not to anyone who does this show. So Alfie Gallagher had some brilliant artwork on there, and he's gotten in touch. Tony's threatened him with a guest spot on this show, and that
I have some great interactions with Alfie on Twitter, so I would love for him to come on.
Yeah, I met him at Thought Bubble 2014. Yeah, briefly. He's just fantastic bloke. We love you, Alfie. It's a love that dare not speak its name. Anyway, anyway, his question was about routines, like the time when you're working on your comics. Like, do we have routines and the time and the headspace that we get into, and like when we're drawing and comic booking? Or, well, when we're doing that and juggling around other work and full-time work, if you know what I mean. This is a very interesting question, I think, because we've both got we can both talk about this.
But kind of the realities of kind of the it's all that I'm going to make a comic about a superhero. I'm going to do this and that. Mm-hmm. When the actual get down to the production and the grind of it,
yeah,
that's where this comes in the big time.
Yeah, I mean, me and Dan both we draw these pages, and do you letter yours as well? You do as well, don't you?
Yeah,
yeah. So we're both self lettering. Dan's colouring his. Obviously, I've got the brilliant Sean Dobie colouring mine. But a lot of it is almost one man band mentality is what we're doing, which is great because you've got a handle on every element. You know, we're perfectionists. We've both got opinions on how we want stuff to look, don't we?
Yeah.
But it's also a curse because you want everything to be right and look like
exactly.
That.
Yeah. I mean, I've made compromises without a doubt.
Yeah, which you have to because if you don't make, and that's the learning, if you don't make these compromises, that sounds horrible, you have to make compromises, but if you're going to progress, you have to sort of bend the rules a little bit.
There was a quote from a creator who, I think Tim Burton was saying, like, basically you've got to get your ideas down on paper as quickly as possible from when you've had them to kind of keep the energy alive in it.
Yeah.
And that kind of the transitional time from when you have your idea to get it finalized in the paper.
Yeah. And I know that that's certainly poignant, I think, because when I'm working on Red Mass pages, I almost have to build up a rhythm. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
I have to keep going. Like, you know, I can't just like have like 2 months like away from it.
No.
Which will happen sometimes, but you know, you have that space away from it. And then when you come back to it, you can't just be like, bam, exactly where you were at the end of the last issue. You have to build up, and certainly, you know, you have to learn again sometimes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're doing things in between this as well. And obviously, like, I'm sketching every day at the moment for the December thing, which is helping. So now I can take that momentum of doing that sketch into, which a lot of artists do these warm-ups, don't you? We've said it before, I guess. You know, I was questioning it, I think, on one show, you know, all these people doing warm-ups, do they need them? But I think I'm answering my own question here, because, like, when you've done that warm-up, you can literally go onto, like, page. I've done that and then worked on a couple of pages, you know.
I mean, guess you can use the metaphor of kind of like an athlete, kind of, you got to warm up your muscles a little bit before you kind of go blasting out the blocks.
Yeah.
I definitely think that. I mean, there's been times when I've started Vanguard issues of having, like, a month or two off, and then the first couple of pages are a bit shaky, and then you find your feet, and it's like, everything's okay, but then that first couple of pages are there. So
yeah. They're just there. They won't go away. Haunting you.
In regards to the kind of production schedule, I've worked in kind of design and print most of my life. Mm. And a production schedule is kind of always there for me, the deadlines, and don't want to miss the deadline. And you've got to factor in when you're going to be doing what. Just don't think, it'd be done on the night. You're going to fucking kill yourself and you have to make more compromises to get what you want done.
Yeah. Aim for a goal, you know, set yourself a goal, like a deadline or whatever, aim for it. But at the same time, real life can happen.
Yeah.
You know, people have got kids, they've got jobs or, you know, who knows what happens. So don't beat yourself up, but at the same time, set yourself a structure.
Well, I know, for instance, if I'm doing, I've recently been doing for the past month or so, Vanguard and one page a week, and it goes posted on a Friday. Mm. So on Sunday and Monday, I'm usually doing pencils and inks, and that has to be scanned by Tuesday. Mm. Tuesday night, I'm flattened, and then Wednesday, Thursday, over the course of the days, evenings, I'm colouring and lettering, and it's done by Friday.
So how much time, like, per day, you know? I mean, obviously, it varies from day to day, but but
producing Vanguard.
Yeah.
God, it takes a long time to get for a page.
Yeah.
I'd probably say about 6, 7, 8 hours. Easy.
And that's a full page, isn't it, really?
From nothing to a final page.
Final page, all coloured, all lettered.
Yeah.
That's
the thing I do is maximise the time you have using downtime. Like, if I have lunch break, I might have like a half hour eating my lunch, talking to colleagues, and then use another half hour drawing, inking, whatever. Even if I'm sitting at the table with everyone and I'm inking and talking to them.
I've had that at work as well. Like, sometimes on lunch, I'll pop open like a text document and start writing, you know, working on the next issue and stuff, and writing down ideas. I mean, at the moment, I'm getting back into the routine of it and trying to, you know, I want to do what you're doing, Dan, have this routine, have this set time, because my goal is to get a couple of issues of Red Mask out next year. And that's a lot of work, not just for me, but for poor old Sean Domi. So I'm going to try and make everything as easy as possible for people. But there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of work to do on them. And also, I'm factoring in, like, when I give it to Sean to colour, I'll be lettering. I'm trying to cut down the time, so I'm lettering the pages while he's got them and adding his magic. But when I'm lettering, I'm also editing. You know, I can put new words in people's mouths and stuff. But it all takes a lot of time.
I mean, you've only got a certain amount of hours in the day, and you've got to kind of allocate time to do stuff, and then not allocate time to stuff that you deem not important anymore or less important.
I mean, it's like, I don't know, breakfast or going to the gym. You've got to set yourself time to do it.
Yeah. Well, before I became a dad, I was doing comic stuff, like doing the 2 pages a week, and then training probably about 5 or 6 days a week, going out to the gym, running, exercising.
Oh, guns.
And
then,
when I've kind of like that, my son came along, something I had to give. And it's like, well, it's either I carry on doing the training or carry on doing comics. And it's like, I've got to do comics. I can't do the training anymore. I still go out for a run occasionally, but it's kind of like with the comic book work, it's so fulfilling creatively, and I've got something there to show for it at the end of the day. Whereas if you don't go down the gym for 2 weeks, basically all that work's undone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But, I mean, it is difficult with you when you've got a full-time job. And I'd probably say that 95 to 99% of the people listening to this are doing their comics around their full-time job.
Yeah.
At the moment, I'm doing it. I say I'm lucky. I haven't got kids yet, so I'm just, you know, I've got that time to put into it. But at the same time, I started a podcast, and that was a hideous mistake. I don't know why.
I think me and you got a bonus in the fact that we work in industries that have creative elements to it.
Yeah.
So, like, there's downtime when I've done a little sneaky little bit of stuff at work, and
the skills are still there, aren't they? They're still being practiced, and
exactly.
And I will not say this enough, people, you like having the skills, and it's valuable, you know, learning how to use InDesign, pick up these programs, and because they'll help you make a better product at the end.
Exactly, yeah. And that translates, it goes both ways. I mean, my stuff on comic book work, it feeds back into my design stuff. And I was working on the cover last week and was doing some stuff, and they were like, how'd you do that? And it's like, well, just kind of, you know.
Yeah,
I don't know how to do it.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but once you've got your stuff out there, I mean, this is just me personally. Once you've got your stuff out there, it's inspiring you to do more.
Yeah, I mean, working with a lot more small press people this year, I found I've worked with someone, and then 2 or 3 months down the line, I see the printed product, and it's like, yes,
yeah,
I want to do more.
Yeah, well, you are working on quite a lot, Dan, to be honest.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I just got some reviews started coming in for Paper Cuts and Ink Stains 3A and 3B. And I did 3B and got a really good review of it. So it's very pleased.
It looks awesome. That's why.
Yeah. I think it looks slightly better digital than it does in print. That's a bit
interesting.
It came out quite heavy in the print.
Yeah.
Maybe how I supplied the art files.
Yeah. That's another thing to bear in mind, people, when you get your printed comics.
Mm.
The print will vary, you know, from your first issue to your 100th issue. It's just the nature of print. There's, you know, you can't, not every issue isn't going to be exactly the same.
Yeah.
Obviously you don't want any mistakes and muck ups, and, you know, so look out for them, but also don't put too much pressure on every issue being perfect.
No.
Yeah. Especially if someone's going to roll it up and put it in their back pocket after they bought it from you.
You can't control every single little facet of it to the nth degree, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, control what you can so that the output you're doing, you're happy with.
Hmm. You know, it's like when I do collaborations. If I've done the pens and inks and I pass it off to someone to do the colours, it's like my bit's done to the best of my ability.
Yeah.
And what they do is great.
You've still got those pages as well, though. You've still got that work. Yeah. What about headspace? You know, we talk about time, and it's do it when you can, and, like, you know, the importance of routines and setting yourself deadlines, etc. But headspace is an interesting thing, and that can, you know, if you're not in the right mindset to do something, you shouldn't force yourself to do it.
Well, it's interesting you said that, because like I've spoken to a lot of professionals and read stuff that basically like when if you're doing this stuff, it's different for us. We're like in free time, but a full timer, you do it, just do it. You know what I mean? Like you got to yourself.
But that's different, isn't it? That's like, if it's a full time, you know, if it's my full time gig and I've got a contract and I'm paying for it, it's like my job now. I'm damn sure going to do it. Do you know what I mean? It'll just be like wonderful that I can make comics all the time, you know. So I'll probably be happy. I won't be whinging about it.
To be fair, I've done that when like I've started drawing and it's just coming at absolute poo and all the proportions are off. You know what I mean? It's not working. Like every head I draw looks like it's fucking gone through a blender.
That's the worst.
It's just the worst. So like it's like, okay, I'm gonna switch it up. I'm gonna do some colouring, or I'm gonna do kind of get a bit of a jump on something else somewhere in the chain.
It's the worst feeling in the world, isn't it? Like when you spend ages on it and you look down and you just think, what the hell?
It's a fucking hell. It's awful.
Yeah. Do you find, what about what you have on in the background, what you listen to? Do you find that helps your headspace?
Not for me. No, I can kind of.
You sit in your darkened padded room.
Well, I've got myself kind of conditioned down to just to kind of get on and do it, and like usually I'm like sitting there drawing or using the computer. My wife might be watching television or something, so I just kind of pretty much in my own little world.
Yeah,
in my thing.
That's what it is. I do go into another little world actually, especially when I'm in a role. Not in a role. I'm not a sandwich.
Jesus. Probably in the front room.
duck and roll. But I used to, like when I was at college and stuff and I was making those like little A5 comics and stuff, I would just sit up in my room, like have music on and, you know, be there all day at a desk. Yeah. Whereas now I'm more likely to, you know, there's probably like a Netflix show on in the background, you know, like just something that can just be on in the background.
Yeah, I've done that. Like, when I've got a day off and like there's no one around, I'll put on like a comedy series that I've seen fucking 101 times.
Yeah. Very important though, people. I had a day off work once and I thought, yes, I'm going to put some films on and I'm going to do loads of drawing. I'm going to get lots done. Do not put a film on that you like and you're going to end up watching instead of drawing. Because that happened with me and I was so annoyed.
Sure, everyone's done this when you're drawing to music and then you realise the music stopped like half hour, 20 minutes ago.
Oh, yeah.
And you're sitting with the earbuds in.
Yeah. But you can't stop because you are on a roll, aren't you, really?
Yeah, you just kind of suddenly realised, oh, there's no music.
Yeah. So there you go. I think that went in all directions, didn't it?
But essentially, I kind of have a production schedule set up. I was going to ask with you, Vince, because you're working to a deadline of sorts, but obviously you've got a bit more leniency.
Yes.
Wait.
So yes. Because you've got the webcomic, and it's the same with all webcomics, isn't it, really? Mm-hmm. That, you know, they have to be weekly, otherwise, you know, there'll be a point when you're losing a viewership. But at the same time, the webcomics people take designated holidays. Like, I know you've got a hiatus coming up. And I know Sarah Millman with The Heart of Time, she's got a hiatus so she can work on something else. Mm. I haven't. Mine's quite loose. But like I say, I'm trying to set myself the goal of next year, 2 issues, you know, because by 2017, I want to have it finished and then look at getting it collected and things like that.
Yeah.
Because it's frustrating sometimes as well, you know, when life does get in the way or you're not putting out the content as much as you want to. And
well, I guess if you said like 12 months, so that gives you 6 months to do an issue and then you kind of break it down how many you need to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, like when I'm on a roll, I mean, not so much with a pencil. I think Mark Lamming said it before that the penciling can sometimes be the hardest, you know, the most work, because you're getting the rhythm of the page, you're getting the layout of the page. When it comes to inking, I can just bust out a couple of pages.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really satisfying when you're on a roll and you can, like, you know, you've had a couple of days and then you look back and think, oh, I've got 4 or 5 pages here, you know. And when you're not doing it full time, of course, like, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, Mark Lamming's an absolute beast.
Yeah. Some of the stuff he's been putting up on Twitter is great. I mean, he's been doing that all week.
Yeah.
He puts bits and bobs up this week. He's been quite prolific on there.
Yeah.
It's monkey_mark. Check him out. Good stuff.
Yeah.
He's the War Machine one was excellent. And like a waterfall scene, then it's just, great.
Yeah. He's ridiculously good, but we're being too nice to you, Mark. We hate you. although he sent in a couple of questions, actually. The first one was, where's Tony? I don't know whether he was asking us or he was just concerned that Tony was somewhere near him at the time. The second question, bags and boards, yes or no?
Bags and boards.
Well, obviously, when it comes to comics, you know, do you...
Oh, yes, okay.
Are you someone that's very much just a bag or a bag and a board, or do you not give a rat's ass either way?
My years ago, I've started migrating to trades just because they're a lot kind of... They can weather a bit more kind of reading and, you know, it's all collected up, whereas...
I love the fact that I was like, answer A or answer B. Dan says... I'll take answer C, please.
Yeah. The only single issue things I really get now is Invincible, and then I'll pick up some stuff when I'm in the shop. Most of the time it's trades.
Yeah. It all depends on your collection, because I'm the same. I'm more of like, you know, the trades and the books, and I want to get more, you know, I do like having comic books in bags and stuff. I do try and do it where I can. What about bags and boards for your own comics? How would you feel about that? Like, if it's on the table, would you offer that to someone? If you had individual issues, I mean, you're looking at trades, but what do you think if someone buys an issue? Do you think it benefits from giving them an issue in a bag with a board?
Yeah, I don't know. Actually, I haven't not considered that,
because some people do. I have noticed that some people do it. It is a nice. Obviously, it'll protect your comic, won't it?
Yeah.
At the end of the day. I mean, I don't do it, but it's something I apart, unless you buy like the special packs that I have on the, yeah, blah, blah, blah.
Would it sort of say like, this is something worthwhile looking after? You kind of send in a message with it. I don't know.
I've never said that about anything I've done.
I don't know. I'd have to consider that. I've not really considered it.
Yeah. It's interesting. If anyone out there, has any opinions on this, because I think it's a simple question that Mark's asking. He's asking, I think, more in the terms of collecting comics.
Yeah.
And I think I'm not so stringent about having a board as well, but I quite like having them in bags.
Yeah.
You know, I've got an awful lot of comics though, especially small press stuff, that I need to bag up.
Yeah, I've got a shitload of Captain America comics. I used to collect all the Captain America comics, and I've got loads of them that I need to bag up.
Yeah.
One of them suffered catastrophic damage with a cat involved.
Oh, my God.
A lot of the bottom bit's been chewed off, so I'm going to have to go and replace that one.
Oh, God.
Yeah, tragic.
Bloody hell. What issue was that?
It's one from the 80s. I think it was when... City of Ice, you know, when Cap gets that drug ice infused into his system. Oh, I don't know if you do know that,
but it rings a bell whenever I think of Cap stories. Well, there's many great stories, but I always think of when he was turned into a wolf.
Oh, fucking hell, I bowed out at that stage. Cap wolf killed me.
Wolf, classic.
You really kind of get some readers saying, oh, I'm never coming back to this, and then like five issues later, they're back.
Yeah,
well. Me, 15, 20 years later. Sure, no.
Have you seriously not picked up Captain America since Catwoman?
No.
Oh, blimey.
I really need... I've not read The Winter Soldier. Nothing. So...
Blimey.
I'm hurt.
Never turn your hero into a werewolf, people. Because unless it is a werewolf, he's all right if they're actual werewolves.
Yeah.
But, yeah, don't turn your Star-Spangled Avenger...
Into a werewolf. Do you know what I mean? Someone at Marvel, they go, yeah, that's a good idea.
Who thought that?
Yeah. You know, a writer's got to think that up, and then you've got to go to the editor then. Hey, I've got an idea. Let's turn Captain America into a werewolf. That fits.
Yeah. I bet there's going to be a bit of fan art that someone's going to draw of, like, Catwolf listening to this episode going, I'm going to kill him. You're crying. Oh, dear. So bags, I think, are good. I don't know whether it makes me sound like a pathetic human being, but I don't necessarily think boards are needed.
I'm pretty sure Tony would have...
Tony's got massive opinions on this.
Yeah.
But then again, Tony, I would say out of the three of us, Tony's the uber collector.
Yeah.
You know, he's the, like you know, getting the dirty paper, as he calls it.
Let's see if we can get this show interactive. If we can contact Tony and he's got an opinion, and we can get into record audio, he can insert it here. and then we can come back.
When is that? When? Hang on, are you trying to give me more work to do?
It seems so.
Jesus Christ. No, but yeah, Tony would definitely have an opinion on it. And I think his opinion would be probably the same as Mark's, because Mark's also a big collector of old, especially like the Bronze Age, you know.
Yeah.
Because they're old men. I can say it, and they're not here to stop me.
You'll get no reprisals from that.
Do you know what? This show's hardening me up to this sort of abuse. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't matter anymore. I'm numb to it. I'm numb inside. That's what this show has done to me. especially after the last couple of weeks of abuse I've been getting.
Yeah, it's been ratcheting up.
I know. But it's lovely to speak to you, Dan. And all joking aside, we do miss you, Tony.
Yeah, dismiss Dan.
But the third question Mark said was, what is that smell? Dan?
I don't know.
I think it's success.
It's success. Smells a little eggy to me.
Oh, that is my quote of the day. There's your pool quote.
Success smells a little eggy.
Yeah, yeah. So it's either success, eggy success, or something has died, Mark, and you really need to sort out your bins. right, next one. B.E. Mura, who's one of our more recent listeners, he's given us a few questions, which I think is we're going to have a lot to say about here.
Cool.
Pros and cons of collaboration.
Mm.
What were you drinking then?
Sorry, I just took a nap of pump tea. My throat's killing me. I think there's a hell of a lot of pros and cons to collabing. So I try to approach it like I mentioned earlier. Mm. Once I've done my bit, I kind of like, you go for it, do what you want.
Mm.
And don't be too upset about whether they do a crappy job.
Yeah. You literally have to get in that mindset of playing well with others, haven't you?
Yeah,
you know, definitely. Because a collaboration is a work of two people. Mm. It's very different to, like, for instance, if I hired you to draw some pages for me, Dan, I'm paying you for this thing and I want it a certain way.
Yeah, which is the way it is.
Yeah. And how do you want to be paid? Fish fingers? That's how you normally get paid, isn't it?
I guess if you're talking in the respect of having a collaboration where it's purely just creative and you're not charging money.
Yeah.
I think that's a very different relationship to someone who's paying someone else to produce content.
Yeah. And I would definitely agree. I've currently got a couple of things sort of in the pipeline at the moment, which I'm more on the writing side of the collaboration. Oh, okay. Yeah, and it's going backwards and forwards, you know. So I've got some ideas, and then it goes to the artists, and then they've got some ideas, or they'd like to say things. Now I've stepped in with these ideas, with these two specific ideas I'm thinking of. I've stepped in to an artist who's got an idea that they want to do something. Okay. And then I've thrown, you know, I've immediately thought, right, I've got this idea. How about this, this, and this? And then they've come back and sort of said, well, that's good. I like that bit. I really like that bit. But this idea, it's not really working for me. That's, you know. So then I change it. And it truly is collaboration. It is like backwards and forwards. But I'm always thinking, you know, I want it to be something that I'm supremely proud of as well, and I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah.
But it's also their idea as well. And no money's exchanging hands. Well, it isn't yet. But, you know, I want to give them the best that they can possibly have.
Yeah.
But I'm also prepared to be lenient about it. I'm not going to come in and sort of say, so this is your idea, right? Well, this is how we're going to do it. Because you can't be like that. You have to be lenient. I mean, there are some instances where two people just absolutely gel, and it just comes together. I mean, Doc Dino, the Kickstarter, which is out at the moment, which people should check out. That needs a good boost at the moment. But that was Tom and Chris just coming together and creating this character. You know, that's two writers working together. And then, of course, they had to source an artist, etc. So collaboration, for me, at the moment, I'm experiencing the pros, because the people I'm working with are brilliant. I haven't had any problems with it, but I know there can be issues with it. So, and we've said it on the show before. Just don't be a dick. Just
Well, I kind of did, before I did Vanguard, I wanted to kind of get my comic book skills up to scratch. And I did a retake with a guy. And I kind of put this, he did the story, I did the art. And kind of my primary interest was that I'm going to draw 4 or 5 issues of this comic and get my art skills up to scratch. But when kind of I've trusted him with the story, after 4 or 5 issues, the story doesn't really make too much sense. And there's a learning lesson to think I should have invested more time to making sure that was sound as opposed to this kind of jumping into it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Were you bouncing ideas back and forth though?
It was like the script would change, like it would change as we went along. But then like when...
Oh, that's interesting.
There'd be like callbacks to previous issues. Mm. And so, well, that there's a big plot hole then. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah. He also asked a question, do you have others read script for feedback? Which ties into that, which is quite interesting. Do you, when you've written stuff, do you give your script to other people? Or when you did this collaboration, did they give you the script for your opinions on it and your notes and things?
I think that's one of the strengths of doing it, surely, like to offer up the opinions and kind of like give it a bit of kind of road testing.
Yeah.
See if it flies. And I've received scripts from people that I'm collaborating with and said, what about this bit? And sometimes it's even to the point where they've got a 9-panel page and I cut it down to a 6-panel page just because it's easier on the artist. And if you can say the same things using less words, you do that.
The script is the place to do it as well. You want to get that. You want to get that locked down. You've got time to get that locked down before it goes onto the page, because you know after Dan spent 6 or 7 hours doing a page, he doesn't want to find out that it's all going to be different.
To be fair, though, I find it very difficult at times to visualize the script until I'm actually working on it, and then suddenly like something could pop out to me and say that doesn't work or that's not quite right. And at that point, you're fucking up to your nuts and guts. Do you know what I mean? Like kind of,
that is the most interesting use of that term I've ever seen.
You're kind of like drawing the panels out and you're like, hold on, this doesn't work. There's a problem with this character flipping sides, or they've like put 200 words in this bloody panel. And then I've also got to show them jumping or something.
Yeah.
It's an interesting one.
Hmm. Evolving from that question is, would you do the same for line art, line work and colours? So would you have other people look at your artwork for their feedback, or are you very much, it's mine, you can't touch it?
No, I'd definitely bring up artwork, and maybe after you've done it. Like I used to go on forum boards a lot and post stuff and say, can I have constructive crits? And Pencil Jack was one. You used to get great crits. They'd ask the question why you do something, and you'd look at something in a different light and think, in going forward, perhaps I can change that and do that slightly differently or better. Or
as long as it's constructive, it's all good, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I would kind of also refer the kind of, it's unfair to the camel, but a camel is a horse designed by committee. You kind of, your vision has to kind of see the artwork through. Do you know what I mean?
You're on fire tonight. Yeah.
You've got to do what you're going to do. And if you keep on offering up for opinions of people putting in their opinions, it may change to something that you didn't intend it to be. Does that make sense?
No, I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
Camels.
Yeah.
Always makes sense. Yeah, it always makes sense with camels. I've obviously, I don't necessarily think, because the red mask is such a personal thing that I haven't really, you know, I almost keep it in like this little bubble until I let it out on the world. Apart from Sean, of course, who like sees it when he colours it. But certainly some people have like given me sort of pages and stuff before and sort of said, what do you think of this? And you know, Sean's shown me pages of Descending Outlands, like for the pacing and stuff. And I always try and give constructive feedback. I mean, normally the pages look awesome.
Yeah. I always try and tell the truth and then end it on
a lie.
You know, I mean, there's stuff when I've seen of other people's and the artwork's cracking, but then there's some issues, like they have a character flipping sides or there's too many close-ups and it's like, I'm finding this very hard to read who's who. And like, it looks fantastic, but kind of the reading the story, I'm being taken out of it because I'm thinking, who's doing this? Yeah. I'm not quite sure.
You never want to confuse your reader. Which can happen a lot with lettering, I find. That's another, you know, I mean, obviously he's talked about the script and the line work, but I think once you've got pages lettered up, sometimes it helps just to show other people. So that, because, you know, because I'm reading something and something might, I've certainly read comics where the rhythm slightly changes because they've put a speech bubble in a place where I didn't necessarily thought it should have gone. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's consideration before you start the speech bubble stuff. Is like what your characters, like if your character one's on the left, character right's, character two's on the right, but character two's speaking first, the speech bubbles are going to kind of be conflicting.
Yeah.
It's not like a, not a massive issue, but in certain instances it can be a real fucking pain.
Yeah. Yeah. Always think about what your characters are going to be doing on the page.
I mean, I read stuff with like letterers when they've kind of like got pages from people and there's not enough room to put in all the speech.
Yeah. And... yeah. Especially like if there's a conversation, I mean, we're going slightly off topic here, but if you're having a like one panel, you've got one big panel with a conversation between two people. Now, in a film or, you know, a script, a film script or anything, it's brilliant to have them like snappy dialogue, you know, one line here, one line there, one line here, one line there. You put that on a sequential page and it's an absolute nightmare to letter and can make it really confusing. You really have to think about the rhythm of how your dialogue is from panel to panel.
There's an interesting point. I can't remember. There's a screenwriting book called, I think it's called Don't Save the Cat or Save the Cat. And he used it in comedy films, but basically when there's a dialogue, a bit of exposition, you have something amusing going on in the background or with the character, so this person can give you the dialogue and the exposition, also there's something else going on. And I mean, sometimes when you do that in comics, if you just have two characters sitting in chairs talking to each other, you're like, yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
But have them doing something,
yeah,
it's like running on rooftops or whatever, that's going to be that.
Yeah. Ah, he also asks, who are your biggest non-comic influences on your comic work? Quite interesting. I think that's like, because at first I was thinking, hey, what? How would I answer this one? But I think if I'm going to be honest, it's a lot of movies. You know, I'm a huge movie fan. So, and a lot of the way I write my comics and the pacing of the action, I think very cinematically, and the writing that I do is always with a cinematic pacing. That's why, I mean, some people don't like it, but you know, I like some, you know, Civil War, like the Mark Miller sort of, he's got a very cinematic way. I mean, obviously he's going to sell it afterwards for millions of dollars, but you know, his ones are very cinematic in like the way that they play out. And that's very much what I kind of think like, but I find the more comics I read, you know, the comics almost filter into it afterwards, if you know what I mean, because I'm thinking about how that's going to work on the page. What about you?
Well, I would say, like, from the writing angle, drawing on kind of books being read, and even like watching TV dramas and how kind of they bring together, you see elements being added into stories that, you know, they're going to pay off and come together at the end. And when the viewers or readers get that payoff, that's the rewarding part. And kind of noticing little ideas or stuff that's dripped in there and then it comes together at the end, that's what really kind of gets me.
Yeah.
I really can kind of, one of the curses, we discussed this before going on about Star Wars, is that once you identify these little quirks and traits in films and TV, you can almost kind of foresee what's coming up, and it's almost like signposted. I didn't have that, and I could just enjoy films for what they are.
I think it also depends on what the work is as well, because, like, you know, I could say John Carpenter is a massive influence on me, but you're not necessarily going to read that in The Red Mask. Actually, you might do. There's a character called MacReady. But you know what I mean, you know, you might like a certain director, but if it's not in the style of your comic, no one's going to see that, you know.
Yeah.
And it all depends on what you're doing, really. I think, you know, I mean, I'm a big fan of Edgar Wright and a lot of British comedy growing up, and certainly comedy timing is very much a big thing with me, which is why I think that filters through in my work.
Yeah.
I think, you know, obviously shows like Spaced and like Edgar Wright's a big influence.
You can definitely feel that in your work when you read it.
Well, there you go. Oh, I've answered the question. Way! Yeah.
Well, I've mentioned mine before it came on, RoboCop. That's one of my favourite films.
Yeah.
And the kind of the satire elements and just over-the-top things going on, it really, I feel like it's kind of played in my work over the years. I mean, in Vanguard, there are spoof ads running all the time.
Yeah.
There's one character, Max Stream, who's kind of a kind of celebrity superhero sellout, and he's in most issues he's kind of hoiking a product. There's one where he's selling a bodybuilder product, and then at the bottom it says like that there's very limited kind of muscle growth, and if used wrong, it may result in death.
Yeah. And you had an action figure one, didn't you, which you showed recently?
Yeah, it might be going up by the time this podcast comes out.
Brilliant. Well, we'll put a link on the Facebook. Yeah.
He's hawking an action figure line at Christmas.
With an intentional typographic mistake.
I do quite a lot of that stuff in my work, not typographical mistakes, but kind of like these kind of meta jokes that kind of, if you really know the kind of the Vanguard universe well, you get it. But otherwise, it'd probably just sail over your head.
Yeah. So would you say that, like, in terms of like non-comic influences, you're more like films and TV rather than like books or literature or anything like that?
I don't know. I try and kind of really just try and take in as many influences as possible.
Yeah.
Visually, I'd say, yeah, very much kind of film and TV have a big kind of influence. But regards to writing, I always try and look at world news and stuff that's going on, because there's so much. They said it about, is it truth is stranger than fiction?
Yeah.
And some of the shit you read is just like, fucking hell, someone actually did that. And
I know. And then you think, blimey, what does Tony do when we're not watching him? Right, let's move on to the next one. Old Kung Fu Vander. Yes, Brian Vander from the States.
Friend of the show.
I was trying to think of another thing to say then, but I thought, no, I don't want to be horrible to him because we love him.
Yeah.
First thing, quite poignant, top three Star Wars characters. God. So you think Kirk, Spock, and then Bones. Frodo. In all honesty, I reckon, hang on, I'm going to try and guess this, you're a Han Solo man.
Me?
Yeah.
Then,
do you say yes or no?
No, I'd say carry on. I'm not going to interrupt you.
No. Right. Okay. So, right. These are the top. I think Dan Butcher's top three Star Wars characters are going to be Han Solo, Boba Fett, and Jar Jar Binks.
You work with Jar Jar. It's weird. I kind of look at the kind of characters in Star Wars as kind of like, all different parts of a jigsaw that kind of they're all meshed together to make the one great big whole. So I find it really hard to say I really like that character out of I always bitch on about this to people, but the we're talking about the Han Solo Greedo thing, who shot first, the ridiculousness, but like you built up this character in such a great way. Like this action just absolutely personifies what he's about, and then to undermine it for no good reason, it's just beyond me. I've never understood that. But what about you then? Favorite characters?
Oh, it's hard to say, because you know, even though we both went to see it today, I'm not an enormous Star Wars fan. I'm a fan of Star Wars before anyone hunts me down and shoots me in the street. I would say I'm more of a Star Wars fan than a Star Trek fan, but I love them both. Yeah, I do love them both. I would probably say, it was probably Han Solo. Boba Fett, even though I think he's become a cult character after the fact because he's not in it that much, let's be honest.
He doesn't really do too much
He doesn't do too much apart from get kicked down a giant.
I mean, he doesn't even capture Han.
No.
Vader does.
Yeah.
Vader.
he just looks cool. I think that's the, you know, from a, you know, I think it's, when I was a kid watching these things, it's the visual aspect, isn't it? I don't know who the third one would be. Do you know what I mean? No, I can't think of one.
No,
I certainly wouldn't say anyone from the no, actually you would. Darth Maul, purely because of a visual thing, but he's
a waste of a character.
Absolute waste, but let's face it, one of the best visual looks of a villain.
Yeah, definitely.
Years. So people probably
sorry for all those creatives on those first films when they really poured their heart and soul into making all this stuff, and then what they come.
Yeah, I know. Oh dear, the good old days. Yeah. Also, Vanda asked us to elaborate on the Comixology submission process. And I know Will Overton, he also agreed he wanted to know more about the Comixology process. For instance, he said, don't submit spreads to them. It's submit individual pages.
Yeah.
So that's a learning. But Dan, we haven't so much touched on Comixology so much.
No.
But it is a process going through it, isn't it?
Yeah. I found the first issue takes months and months, like maybe 3 or 4 months before you'll hear back from them for an approval, and every one after that is a lot quicker.
Yeah, I mean the basic setup of it is when you start with Comixology, it's not just a simple idea of like, right, I'm going to start, I'm going to upload it, it's going to be good to go, because this is also a business as well, so they're going to be selling comics, so you have to factor in. It's very important that you call yourself something, whether it be your publisher name or whether you're selling as an individual. That's something that they will ask you.
Yep.
Now, when you do this, be mindful that it won't change. You can't change. Because I know Blood Blokes recently, Adam Cadwell, the first three were done with Great Beast Comics, who are no more. And because of that, he's doing them all self-published now. He has to take them off to them
and
resubmit them as himself. I mean, I don't know how quickly the resubmitting process will be, and I don't think he's stepping into it too quickly yet. But yeah, just bear that in mind, people. When you start with Comixology, this is what you're going to be doing. This is how you're going
to.
Yeah.
Initially, they've got guidelines to set up, but you need like a kind of bio about your company, publisher, and a graphic. You need a graphic for you as a creator. And a biography to kind of put that in before you even get started.
Yeah. I mean, I will say this. It is there to read.
Yeah.
It might sound complicated when we're talking about this, but I am a technical dunce, really. I mean, Dan's probably the same because we only use...
Indeed.
We have no idea what Skype does. We're just talking to each other. But so when doing it, it seemed quite daunting. But they will step the Comixology submit, and that's where you want to go through. There's detailed instructions on what you've got to do, and if you read them and take them in, then it should be simple.
Yeah, yeah. If you can set up an InDesign document with the specs they recommend, and you're putting everything on them, that's not a problem.
Yeah,
they ask for specific export settings.
Yeah.
I think someone asked me for them for me recently, and I exported it and then emailed it to them so they could just load it up and away you go. It's not too difficult.
Yeah. We won't get onto the money yet. So just in terms of the submission process, like Will said, make sure your pages are separate pages.
Mm.
Don't give them spreads. Don't give them anything like that, because people are going to be reading these a page at a time.
Yeah.
You know, you don't necessarily have to worry about the guided view narrative, which is something. I mean, I quite like it on Comixology.
I quite like it,
And it's quite cool seeing my comic doing that because I like it. Adds a bit of dramatic pacing, I think. But you don't really have to factor that in mind when you're submitting things, because they will take this PDF and they will work their magic on it, which is why these things take a lot of time, because they're doing a lot of mainstream stuff.
Yeah. Essentially, you're just marking up squares that when you go press it cycles between squares or parts of the image on the page.
Which can work brilliantly if you've got a splash page with just one sort of punchy bit of dialogue. Then it can zoom out on it. You know, it will focus on the one bit of dialogue, and then the next time you tap it, it will zoom out and you can see the whole page. That can be quite dramatic.
I didn't fall foul of this, but the ratings are quite strict. The violence doesn't seem to be too much of an issue, but the sexual swear words certainly are. I mean, I had to get mine on, and I mentioned this before on the show, but to get it under a 17 rating, could only use one F-bomb and three S's. That's shit and fuck.
Well, there you go. There's our sort of rating gone out the window. Jesus.
Yeah, there's no mention of the C, so I definitely wouldn't put that in.
No.
But I used bitch and slag in issue 5, and that sailed through. Yeah. I thought I'm not gonna change it, and they didn't flag it up.
So there you go, people, bitch and slag.
Yeah, but this is kind of, if you use like above that level, they will put you in an adult category, and you're looking at kind of like pornography, and you're just not going to get readership. Well, you might get readership, but you're not hitting the market but you want to go for.
Yeah, because also, you know, because they do quite a lot, it doesn't mean that they're not paying attention to you. They are going to notice.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because like I say, they have to put the work in putting these books out. And yes, the submission process, you got to be prepared to be patient. You may have this book ready to go, and you have the printed copies. But when you submit to Comixology, you've got to understand that it's going to take them a long time. You know?
Yeah.
There are other sites like Drive-Thru Comics and, you know, Sequential. I haven't used this Sequential app, but they may be more immediate because people can download PDFs, etc. Yeah. But Comixology is a different kettle of fish. So just bear that in mind.
I had a couple of things with them where you make your PDF and you go to the upload page and you put the information in. Yeah. You upload the PDF and bang, it goes. But then, like, if there's an error on that page, if you've not filled out a field properly, it says there was an error in upload, and you're like, it marks the field in red, and it's like, oh, now you've got to upload the PDF again.
Yeah.
So be really careful with that.
Yeah. And they will, I mean, you'll get the email eventually sort of saying it has been confirmed or it has been rejected. But then after that, you'll still have a bit of time to wait before it goes live.
They send you emails when it's going live, and then they give you a shout on Twitter when...
Yeah.
It goes live. I've not had a problem with Comixology. It's good.
No, yeah, they're great. They're great. I mean, the one thing, do bear in mind, people, because it's for monetary purposes, you do have to fill in like a tax form and things like that. You have to give them all the appropriate details for when you know, if you're going to sell gangbusters, if you sell out, you know, the money has to go somewhere. But also, they don't pay anything until you've earned over, is it $100?
I believe so.
$100. So let's go face it, people, most of us aren't making anything from Comixology, but it's out there and it's a great format to have. You know,
I think you may have to be self-registered for tax if you're going for that for the UK. So be aware of that.
Yeah,
it might be a different story, and I'm pretty sure it's a different story in the States, because everyone does their own tax individually, I think.
I mean, it is one of those more specific things you have to do, fill out these forms and stuff. But, you know, you're going through a business, you have to learn through the, you know, these are one of the learnings of it, a bit more specific. You know. So if there's anything you think we haven't covered about this, just let us know.
You know, we'll happily put it up on the Facebook page. Try and help people out.
Yeah, because we've both had it, you know, Dan's. Have you just had a new issue come out?
I've got past couple of weeks, the issue 5 got okayed, and the collected edition, which is 1 to 5.
Oh, so awesome.
There's a lot on there.
Yeah.
I don't know how that would work with them. Would they have like the previous issues on hand and then just put them all together for the collected one? Or would they have to go through and do the guided view from the beginning? I don't know.
They must have the collected. Does it work like a bundle? It must work like a bundle, I guess.
Because I've supplied the collected version as one PDF with all 5 issues in them.
So. Oh, well, that might be. Yeah, it might just do that then. So it just follows. Yeah, flows on. Yes. So there you go, folks.
Yeah.
Let me have a look at my list. I think that's all of them. Yes. Cool. Yes. Tony.
Well, thanks for the questions.
Yes. Thank you very much. Yeah. I think we waffled on like actually pros.
Yeah.
About that. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how well we answered any of those questions.
No. It's two well-meaning amateurs who are answering these questions.
I mean, we always say, like, from the get-go, we're learning like you people are learning. So, you know, if you've got anything that you think will help people about these processes or how you think things we should check out to help people with their comics, then get in touch, you know, because we're all in it to make comics, really, aren't we?
I mean, always give us a shout on the Facebook page or via Twitter. I mean, I'm happy to help you answer any question relating to this, if I can, or point you in the right direction, at least.
Yeah. So there you go. We're quite helpful, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our best.
Yeah. We try our best. I don't know. Helpful. Yeah, I don't know how that comes out. Yeah. So, I mean, have we got any events or anything that we need to shout out? We do.
Tony mentioned this the other day. He went up on Friday, I believe. He said it was absolutely cracking. The Avery Hill display at Orbital Comics. It's run until the 3rd of January. So you've got a bunch of time next week, around the 24th, 25th, if you're not busy. Come on. But no, seriously, definitely check that out. I think they've got work from The Rabbit and various other books they do. He said he was gushing about it, saying it was great. So, also going to mention a big shout out to John Freeman and Down the Tubes, which Tony writes articles for.
Yeah.
John is so good. He got a real insider view of the industry, and I'd recommend following their Facebook page and the Twitter account and checking out the site. It's great.
John's a top bloke. He was a guest on episode 15. Be sure to check that out, because
fairly just like scrape the surface of the knowledge he has on industry.
Yeah, we'll probably have him back at some point.
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah.
So check out Down the Tubes. While we're on the shout out mode, shall we a place to hang your cape? Shall we?
Legends.
Do you want to do the honours for that one?
No, you can go. You go for this one.
Oh, we're passing the buck. Well done. a place to hang your cape. Friends of the show, and obviously we like them as well. Mm. If you're into superheroes and that general tiswas, as we all are here, not everyone is, but all the cool people are.
They essentially do like films, TV. They do games. I'm not too sure.
I don't think they do games. I think it's a lot of it's comics, movies. I think it's anything. If anything requires their attention, then they'll give it a shout out, won't they?
But pretty much anything to do with any kind of superhero, sci-fi kind of stuff. It's a great site. There's a lot of good opinion pieces on there.
Yeah, they just did a couple of reviews for Paper Cuts. Was that?
Yeah, they're loving Paper Cuts over there. It's really going down well.
Paper Cuts and Ink Stains from Madia Studios.
Yeah.
Dan Butcher might be in, but don't worry about that. A place to hang your cape. Always good times there. You know, whether your favourite show is Arrow or Supergirl, which I haven't watched Supergirl yet. Have you watched Supergirl yet?
I've seen the odd episode on TV, but I've not really got into it.
Oh, really? So. The thing that blew my mind recently, hang on, spoilers. I don't know if this is a spoiler, but I'm going to say it now. So,
are we going to have that groovy sound effect?
No, I can't be bothered. Yes. look, I have more time to do it then. But Martian Manhunter's in it.
Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't know that.
I just stumbled across this on YouTube. Sorry, Dan. Am I spoiling it for you?
No. Go for it.
Yeah.
This is in the Supergirl.
Yeah, Supergirl. Yeah. I know there's like, obviously, there's characters like Red Tornado.
Red Tornado looked fucking awful.
Yeah.
I would have said that.
Yeah. I've heard pretty good things about it.
Okay.
So I think at some point.
Tony, he likes it. He really likes it.
Yeah. Why'd you say it like that? He really likes it.
It's weird. I find that we watched The Flash, and in that you got Hawkgirl, Vandal Savage, all these crazy characters popping up. And then you look at DC cinematic output, and it's like Batman fighting mercenaries in a trench coat. And this seems a bit at odds. Do you know what I mean? It's like grim and gritty. And then the other hand, it's like really light, fun.
Yeah. I think, if I'm being honest, I think they're more successful with their TV than they are with the cinema. But, you know, who am I to say things like this? But
yeah, I'm not one of those people that kind of hates on films before they've even seen them. But
yeah.
I'm kind of...
Like, but I hate this.
My eyebrow is arched with the Batman v Superman.
Yeah. Well, we're going to see it, though, aren't we?
I don't know if I'm going to see it in the cinema, to be honest. I really don't know.
Oh, really? That's quite interesting. I know a few people that think that.
I refer you to the Catwolf incident. Okay.
Right. Never
that's
mind
not,
this.
That's not an idle threat.
Never mind this Civil War business. Let's have a Catwolf Captain America movie. Yeah, let's do it. Let's make it happen. Let's start a petition. No, let's not, because it was awful. It was awful and it was hideous. And that's like a Spider-Man doing the maximum clonage. Or
what was that? The Clone Saga.
Which I wasn't a fan of. I think Tony is, isn't he?
Big fan.
I think, oh, or was it Maximum Carnage? Yeah, because I know Sean likes that. So they were like,
it's where they kind of really Spidey kind of comics, whenever a writer's doing something that's slightly controversial, they're fucking on them straight away. You know, last year, was it last year or year before, where like Spidey swapped bodies, like the Superior Spider-Man?
Yeah.
And they're just absolutely going after that Dan Slott guy.
It's an interesting thing. Like, small press doesn't necessarily have this. I mean, I haven't heard of this issue. Because obviously with the mainstream, everyone feels like the characters are theirs, don't they? Mm. Everyone feels like, oh, that's not my Daredevil, or that's not my Spider-Man or Superman or whatever. But do you think anyone's ever had that with a small press character?
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine that they would.
I've had people that have got upset when I've killed characters off. But I guess it's a bit of a different issue if you're looking at it.
Which time, Dan?
The multiple times. A character like Spider-Man, and you do something that kind of changes the status quo, people get really fucking irate.
Yeah, which I personally don't understand that, because it's like the status quo is going to revert, and it's going to, there's always a basic template, isn't it? That's always going to be there.
Yeah, that's the thing with those.
Yeah.
I think as long as the whatever is happening is serving the story and it's a good story, you go for it.
And another thing you need to know, folks, is much like Game of Thrones, when it comes to Dan Butcher's comics, don't get too attached to anyone.
Well, if they die, or you think they might die, that there's more realism in a way. Yeah. There's no kind of Spider-Man character you know who's going to make it through all the time.
Yeah, I must say when you do a permadeath, it is quite, it's a very effective when you've done it.
They're not coming back.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, you should read it, people, from the beginning. But there are certain characters that you don't expect to bite the biscuit, and they do. At the same time, there's a few that I'm glad didn't.
I haven't yet.
Yeah. Oh, don't say that. Don't play with my emotions, man.
Yeah, but Marvel characters of DC, I know they've got to bring them back. But like, someone dies, and it's like on the news. And it's like, well, if you know the fucking game, they're going to be back in a couple of months' time.
Yeah.
So. Don't worry.
I get a bit more worried about that with the movies, I must say.
Yeah, I think that's permadeath.
Because people keep talking about Chris Evans, like, oh, you know, it's going to be his last one. You know, is Cap going to be killed? I'm going to put it on record. I don't want Chris Evans to stop being Cap.
Me neither.
Yeah, the actor Chris Evans, not TFI Friday.
I think I'd make a kind of thing here. I reckon he will be dead at the end of Civil War. I don't think Cap will make it through.
Oh, do you know what? I really hope you're not right.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know. I'll just... Cap.
Well, you know, you have a contract for a certain amount of films, and that's going to be coming up very soon.
Yeah.
You've got Falcon in there ready.
I really like Falcon in it, but I don't... See, we're becoming another podcast again. Because this is very much... like two guys in a pub just talking about, this film, blah, blah, blah.
It's like the millions of other podcasts out there.
Yeah. Which we don't want to be. Although, here's a pop quiz question for you. Vanguard, right? A studio's just going to throw money at it, right? They're going to turn it into a film. Who would you get to direct it? I'm not going to ask the casting question, because the casting question, I think, is too difficult.
I don't know, actually. John Woo?
Amazing.
I don't know.
What era, John Woo? Are we talking Hard Boiled? Are we talking Face Off?
Probably The Killer.
Oh, you've gone old school there.
Killer Hard Boiled.
You like The Killer better than Hard Boiled?
Yeah, I would say so.
You're mad.
I saw The Killer first, and it kind of had such a left a mark on me.
What age were you? What were you, 10?
I must have been 15, 16, something like that.
Blimey.
Super killer. Quality.
Blimey. I'm learning so much about you, Dan.
Yeah.
How you've become the crime fighting.
Traumatic. Sent into madness. Gave birth to my superhero alter ego.
Oh, yeah. He rides on a train.
So what about if you pick a director to do the Red Mask?
Do you know what? I asked the question without even thinking about it myself.
The hard one.
It is a difficult one. I mean, I have in my head cast the Red Mask. But if anyone wants to know what, you know, he's not big enough now for me to give those opinions and for them to really matter that much. I don't think if I was to say, oh, I think this, it would be this actor. Most people would be like, all right. As for directors, who could it be? I mean, a lot of people just say the easy one would be Edgar Wright, but I probably wouldn't go that. Maybe Neil Marshall.
Okay, yeah.
I do like Neil Marshall. Anyone who doesn't like Dog Soldiers is a fool.
Yeah.
if only there was a Captain America in there with a wolf's head. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're just going off on one again.
Yeah.
Have we got any other shout outs?
The Pipe Dream Comics. Another ace.
Yes. We didn't say a place to hang a cape.
Did we?
AP2HYC for all your superhero goodness, because they go on about superhero films and TV shows, and they do it a lot better than this idiotic waffle you just listened to for the last 5 minutes.
I think we're both getting tired and just losing it.
Yeah, it's been a long week. Christmas is just around the corner. I've got my work's Christmas meal tomorrow. Lord knows.
Awesome.
Yeah. There's not going to be any like photocopying of bums on. Unfortunately, no. not like yours, Dan. That was that was chaos. I couldn't believe it.
That was Tony. He always references photocopy asses.
Be on the lookout for that small press comic next year. Pipe Dream Comics. If you like your books digital, then check out Pipe Dream Comics. We talk about them again. They always give us a shout out on the show. They're on the lookout for small press books. I know there's been a few guys that have listened to this show, like small press creators, have got in touch with them and got a shout out about their books.
Yeah.
So check out pipedreamcomics.co.uk. They specialise in digital comics, which is quite apt considering we're just talking about Comixology. They do a focus on the Comixology Submit as well. So if you've got anything that you think that they should check out, you know, even if you haven't got your own comic, but you there's a book you want them to know about, just get in touch with them. Just let them know. So Pipe Dream Comics and a place to hang your cape.
Awesome.
I'm going to give a small shout out now for a little bundle that I've, a digital bundle. Speaking of digital comics.
Go for it.
Yeah. The Freaks, Heroes and Horrors bundle is back and it's bigger than ever. Right. And people are thinking, what the hell is that? Well, I'll tell you what this is right now because I've got it in front of me on the screen. There's four publishers and 13 comics and one low price. Now, I'm not going to tell you the price yet, but just check this out. This is what you can get in it. There's Redshift Press. They're bringing the horror with Dark Matter and Whispering Sands. We talked to those guys on the show.
Yep.
Raw Edge Comics, whoever they are, they're bringing the sci-fi superhero comedy Carnage with the Red Mask from Mars, which you can get the origin issue, plus issues 1 and 2. Wow. The Good Guys comic is bringing the booze, along with Lashings of Celebrity Superhero Depravity, which you know a lot about, Dan, in Good Guys, issues 1 and 2. And from Biomechazoic Comics, yes, I said it right, it comes a whole host of mutant oddities and twisted sci-fi tales in 100% biodegradable issues 1 to 6. Now, it's a digital comics bundle. It'll only be around till January the 1st. How much? So that's 13 comics, Dan. How much would you pay for that?
It's almost priceless. We've read there. Quality, now, talent. Yeah. Love it.
One low price. What would you say?
£10.
Boah, no. Try again.
Down? 5.
No, my friend.
Wow, even less than that.
You can get 13 digital comics for one low price of £1.70.
Bloody hell. That's a bargain.
Which is $2.50 if you're in America.
That's worth it for issue 1 of Red Mask alone.
Oh, dude.
And the rest of it.
Oh, dear. This is wonderful. I can feel the love in the room.
I'm not even in that room.
Thank God. No, seriously, it's for your own good. The bundle will be only be around until January the 1st. Well, I did a bundle, what was it, a few months ago, wasn't it, this first? But I've added the second issue of Red Mask to it, and they're all great comics. And for that kind of money, you know, you're getting PDFs of some great books for at an absolute steal. So I know everyone's got no money at Christmas, but it's £1.70.
Yeah. You
know, that's cheaper than a sandwich.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on the sandwiches you're buying. Yeah, it'll be on Drive Thru Comics. So search for the Freaks, Heroes and Horrors bundle on there. I'll put a link in the show notes,
brilliant,
etc. But probably be on the lookout on Twitter and stuff, because everyone that's on there will be pimping it out. So there you go, folks. I also want to give a small shout out to Simon Russell, who got in touch with us. He very much appreciated the Herb Trimpy chat that we had the other day. You know when Tony was showing his knowledge of comics and you and me went completely blank?
Yeah, as always.
Yeah, which Mark Lamming thought was absolutely hilarious.
Yeah. Yes. Tony's like Dictionary Corner on Countdown.
I know, yeah. If you leave out the... Just leave out the word dick. I'm only joking, Tony, don't hurt me. But yeah, Simon Russell, he's sent a few things our way, so we'll probably be talking about them more.
Cool.
On the run-up. So there you go, folks. I think that's it, isn't it?
Yeah, so next week is going to be a big
next. Yeah, this one has been short, but oh so sweet, hasn't it, Dan? It's been sweet. Indeed. It's been beautiful, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I really appreciate those scented candles you brought with you. Lovely.
Get into the very heart of Vince, the nub of Vince, what makes Vince.
Just scent the candles and a back rub. That's all it'll do.
Literally.
I tell you what, I complain about being picked on, but I just give people ammunition, don't I?
Yeah, you don't help yourself. And you know, I'm taking it easy if Tony was here.
Yeah, I know. Just wait until next week. Next week's show, folks. Be prepared. But yeah, it's going to be a good one next week, because we're going to be talking about what has been good this year. We've only started this show for this is episode 25, which I think is amazing. We've got to this episode.
Yeah.
And thank you everyone who's listened to it and told everyone to listen to it. It's amazing. And it's good to know that you're checking out these books as well. And the community is just helping each other out. So that's brilliant. Time, yeah. We've got some great guests as well coming up for the new year. There's loads of people that are going to be on. So keep your eyes out for... We're going to make you spend even more of your money.
On the small press world.
Yes. What a wonderful world it is. But yeah, yes, so next week is going to be an extra bumper show where we're going to talk about 2015 and what's coming up in 2016. Plus, we probably might even touch on the thing that we were going to talk about this week, but Tony was too busy delivering presents around the world.
We might even have our comics of the year, small press comics of the year.
Yeah, we might.
It's so fucking hard.
I know. I think if we have a small press comics of the year, it's going to be quite difficult. It is going to be a really difficult one.
Yeah, you know, very.
Because I've read an awful lot of amazing books this year, especially since we started the show.
Oh, big time, yeah.
Yeah, it's been insane how many good comics are out there. And it's only going to get better from here. I hope.
I'm sure it will.
Yes. So, me and Dan, hope you have enjoyed this episode, folks. Let us know what you think, or if there's any other info you want to know about certain things like Comixology, like we said. There's several different ways you can do it. You can email us, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. If you've got any events or comics, etc., email us at tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. They're always shared between us, and we get to them when we can. Obviously, with Christmas, there's a lot going on. And we'll probably have, like, I don't know. Do you get any graphic novels or anything for Christmas, Dan?
I mentioned the Viz tradition last
Yeah, no,
week.
No. You mentioned it. You mentioned the fact that no one will buy it for you.
I always so buy you myself it for Christmas Eve, and I usually read that Christmas Eve.
Yeah, but do you have any trades or anything on your wish list that some people get?
Loads. There's loads of stuff on my wish list. I don't know if anyone's got any. The Luther Strode, all of that's on my wish list.
Such a good book. It's one of my favourite books.
There's there's some Frank Cho stuff, some artist essential stuff on the wish list. I hope I've got some of it. That'd be brilliant.
So next week, folks, we'll find out.
Yeah.
Check us out on Twitter. Get involved on Twitter. You can follow us at The Awesome Pod. Facebook.com. I'm sure there's stuff that's going to be posted up in the next few days.
Yeah.
It's facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. Thank you for listening to us on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, I don't know how many people do, but we always love it when people leave a review. I know a lot of shows ask for those sort of things, but we love the feedback, and we love the good word of mouth that people are getting. We've been very fortunate to get a lot of nice feedback.
Yeah.
So thank you very much.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah, we do really appreciate it. And we appreciate each and every one of you beautiful people out there. And Tony. he's going to kill me next week. No, and as it's like, I don't know whether you'll be listening. As we speak now, Christmas is just around the corner. So I hope everyone out there, everyone at the Awesome Podcast, I hope you all have a brilliant Christmas.
Yeah.
I hope you chill out, take it easy, work on your comics, you bastards, work on your comics. We want your comics. Don't be selfish.
Maybe take Christmas Day off for an hour or two.
Don't listen to Dan. You have to be working.
All the time.
All the time. Don't worry about spending time with your family. It's fine. We want your comics.
No. Families come and go. Yeah. Comics are always there.
Maybe in your post-apocalyptic world.
Well, drive the masses to make more and more comics.
Oh, dear. You're like, what was it, Immortan Joe from Mad Max?
Driving around in souped-up V8s trying to find the last remnants of paper and pencils.
Oh, dear God. There's a story here. We need to develop it. Thank you very much, folks. I hope you loved this little twist on what we normally do. Tony will be back next week, where it's going to be a mega show, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll be drinking, will we?
Well, I could do. Not got word.
No, God. Yeah. No, we can't do a drunk show.
No, just the technical side may suffer when you're trying to press buttons and stuff. That's the only thing I worry about.
Well, you don't know how much it suffers as it is.
Yeah, Jesus. That's what I mean. The detriment of adding alcohol.
Oh dear, yes. But anyway, folks, from everyone at the Awesome Comics Podcast, myself and Dan,
yep,
and Tony, because we can feel his presence.
They're under the tree.
Oh dear God!
Sorry.
Oh, Jesus.
I have a crowd booing sound effect. But yeah, have a great Christmas, and we'll see you.
We'll see you
on the other side of it
next week. It won't be next year, but there's one more to come, folks. Yeah. So
unfortunately, there's one more.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people that get you like full of turkey and stuff. So while they're digesting that, they can listen to us.
Yeah.
And then the turkey will come back up again. anyway, have a brilliant Christmas, folks. And from Tony.
Hey, Aunt Wayne, you got a comb in me eye.
Dan and myself. I'm terrified of next week. Have a brilliant Christmas and stay awesome.
See you later.
See ya. Bye-bye.